Let's take a look now at some of the analysis that comes with that. And Matthew Thompson of Resco Asset Management joins us in studio for that. Thanks so much, Matthew, for your time today. So a flat performance being put on by the JSE today. The markets at this point pricing in a very disappointing budget. How much of your focus on that presentation this week, given all that's playing out in the global arena as well?
I think how we see that playing out is through lower volumes. So we have seen lower volumes throughout this whole year. A lot of local investors waiting for December and foreign investors feeling a bit jittery about our political situation. So yeah, I think lower volumes, flat market, the market kind of on edge, waiting to see what happens, not only on Wednesday, but also obviously in December as well.
And we take a look at the kind of movement we've seen on the Rand, because a weaker Rand coming through, providing somewhat of a tailwind to our big industrial players, but miners specifically. What have you made of that movement? Because it's been somewhat of a trend for, you know, bulk of this year.
Absolutely. And I mean, the Rand at 1280 earlier this year, a lot of commentators were saying that it was probably going towards the weakening cycle towards the end of the year as we get closer to December. But also what we have seen holding up the Rand for most of the year is strong emerging market flows. But lately, you've seen a lot of the other emerging market currencies holding up and the Rand slowly eking out, getting a little bit weaker. Mm-hmm. And that's primarily on political concerns. Obviously December is on every investor's mind at the moment.
And the extent to which foreigners are backing away from Absolutely. Our local equity space,
yes.
right? Because you alluded to low volumes and that in large part a big contributor to those low volumes.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay, let's take a look at that weaker Rand, because it's interesting how, you know, we had shares with UK exposure being pressured today as Brexit negotiations continue to weigh. Yet a company like Mediclinic, one of those that has made an individual headline, company news headline today, and saying that, well, showing how SPY has rejected its offer on the table. What have you made of that news and the extent to which Mediclinic wants to entrench its footprint even further in that UK market?
Well, I'm quite surprised at SPY's management why they rejected the bid from Mediclinic, and they didn't even want to take it further. But Mediclinic does have until the 20th of November to make a firm offer. It was offered at a 30% premium to the SPY share price on the 17th of October. But I think from a Mediclinic perspective, I would have liked them to bed down the Al Noor acquisition for a little bit longer before looking to SPY. I think the market knew that they wanted to take out the minorities in SPY, but at this stage, I think the market reacted slightly negatively. Mediclinic trading down about 2.5% today, and I think that's in line with what I would expect.
Could this be a blessing in disguise, though, the fact that SPY has spurned the offer?
I definitely think so. You have seen a lot of South African companies going offshore. Famous brands last week or the week before coming out with a very weak trading update, primarily based on the Gourmet Burger Kitchen weak numbers in the UK. So a lot of South African companies potentially looking offshore and not being able to execute. So I think I would like to see Mediclinic execute fully on their other international businesses, and then maybe a year or two down the line make a further offer for SPY. So we'll see what happens.
I guess especially where there's so much uncertainty around what Brexit would spell, because it's highlighted that you know, Brexit will see a drop in the national income used to fund public services like healthcare, and that would provide it with opportunity you know, to actually delve further into that healthcare space. But is it necessarily as clear-cut as that?
I don't think so, because consumers might also bear the brunt of it, and the consumers are the ones who spend at the private healthcare facility. So I think the risk has increased significantly in the UK, and you really have to look at risk-adjusted returns. So I think Mediclinic must have done their homework around how they think Brexit will turn out. But at this stage, I don't think anyone really knows.
Absolutely. Like I say, shares with UK exposure today being pressured. So the likes of Capital & Counties, Brait, Intu Properties as well. Let's take a look at Group 5, because it's allowed Green Bay's 1.6 billion rand bid to lapse. Are you surprised?
Slightly surprised, especially given how the share price reacted last week. And then Green Bay coming out today saying that they're not going to pursue it any further. So I think from a Green Bay perspective, It's quite positive seeing management being quite down the line. We will only be prepared to pay a specific price for these assets, and then they can look globally. You know, they've started looking in Portugal, looking at infrastructure assets with a resilient group. So I think from a Green Bay perspective, I'd be quite positive of the fact that they didn't go back into negotiations for a higher price.
Which brings us to the overarching theme here. I mean, do we have companies, you know, being realistic about their own valuations, or acquirers being a bit too opportunistic in the current environment?
I think it's a case of the former. I think companies are overvaluing themselves, especially given the valuation backdrop globally, where you've seen asset prices really inflated. So these acquisitions are generally at a premium to those inflated asset prices. So I think I'd be questioning management if they do turn down something so quickly and so easily.
Well, we had Gold Fields out with some news today, maintaining its full year production guidance, and that despite forecasting a 10% drop in its production from its sole South African mine, South Deep. We don't have time to get into the detail of that, but it does bring us nicely to your stock pick, which is Anglo Gold, and it's a company that's, of course, taking itself out of the South African market. Is that the appeal it's putting on the table for you right now?
Absolutely, and purely from a valuation perspective. If you think the gold price is going to stay where it is or go slightly higher, I think Anglo Gold is a fantastic opportunity. It's trading at a severe discount to global miners. It's the third biggest gold mine in the world by production, and a lot of the discount is the Tanzania political risk as well as South African risk. And now that they're getting rid of some of their South African assets and they've received a reasonable price for those assets, I expect them to re-rate in line with global peers, and you'll be able to see some nice share price appreciation regardless of the gold price, unless the gold price significantly reduces.
Well, Matthew, let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, that's Matthew Thompson, and he's joining us from Resco Asset Management. Well, we've had the greenback trade around its highest in 2.5 weeks against a basket of 6 major currencies today. That's what traders speculating that the next head of the Federal Reserve could take a more hawkish stance on monetary policy. And as we have renewed expectations of federal tax cuts as well. Spain's escalating political crisis, though, putting the euro under pressure in a week. And in a week that the European Central Bank is expected to announce a reduced commitment to its stimulus policies. Locally, in the meantime, despite a weakening due to global forces and continued domestic political tension over the weekend, the rand remaining pretty steady today as the market awaits Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba's budget speech on Wednesday. So with all of these moving parts simultaneously at play, joining me to go through the detail is RMB's interest rate derivative specialist, Andre Ehrenstein. Thanks so much, Andre, for joining us today. So we had the rand steady, but at weaker levels today as political uncertainty unnerves investors. The market focus, of course, shifting to Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba's budget speech or mini-budget speech this week. Where are your confidence levels sitting, Andre, as far as the minister having effective and enough a plan in place to arrest the decline in budget deficit is concerned?
Well, I think that's a much broader issue that needs to be addressed. I think the SARB have pointed out many times that the heavy lifting has to be done by structural reforms and fiscal policy. Monetary policy has very little influence at this point in time. And we're suffering from a crisis of confidence. You know, there's a lack of investment across the board from corporate balance sheets, you know, right through to consumers. So I think there's a big job on Wednesday to alleviate not only our concerns, but I think the rating agencies are also going to be watching that speech with a microscope.
Absolutely. So what trading levels have you pegged up for the local unit in the run-up to Wednesday? With a disappointing budget for the most part having been priced in already, how much further downside do you anticipate if he doesn't deliver?
Yeah, I think a lot's been priced in. I think the risk at this point in time is that, you know, there is a plan of some sort that will alleviate some concerns, and you could actually see the rand rally. But I certainly think that we're in a very wide range, and I think we're looking at 1385 to 14 on the top side. And if there is something that comes out of it that, you know, if there's talk of a VAT debate, I think you could see the Rand rally back quite hard.
Okay, let's take a look at global forces, because we've got central banks and monetary policy very much in focus globally. Stateside, how much of that really hinges on the appointment of a new U.S. Federal Reserve chairman? I mentioned earlier that we have some highlight that despite this intense speculation that a more hawkish Fed chairman is going to be appointed, policy rates still likely to be driven primarily by data, regardless of who is nominated. Do you share that view?
Absolutely. I think central banks, in order to maintain their credibility, they're going to have to maintain and see what the data brings. The first and foremost is inflation rates. I don't think we haven't seen the inflation rate coming out of the US. We haven't seen that sustained inflation. Mm-hmm. And that's really what the Fed have been looking for. So whether it's Janet Yellen or whether it's someone else, they're going to be looking at the same inflation data.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to be concerned that if even with stimulus, even with tax cuts, if that inflation data doesn't transpire into the real economy, they're not going to be hiking rates as aggressively.
Let's take a look at tax cuts there, because we've already had the dollar a major beneficiary as President Donald Trump and his Republicans took this small step towards those tax cuts coming through. Do you see this eventualizing sooner rather than later and starting to trickle through to the real economy?
I think it will take a lot longer than we expect. I think like any form of legislation that we've had, Donald Trump puts forward, it's taken much longer for it to actually transpire, and for that to actually filter into the real economy will probably take the better part of 2 years.
Okay, so this week we've got the European Central Bank expected to announce a reduced commitment to its stimulus projects. I'm expecting the ECB to announce a longer 9-month timeline of this asset purchase program, but at a slower pace of 30 billion euros a month. Where are your expectations sitting, and what matters more, the timeline or the size of those purchases?
Definitely the timeline. I think the ECB wants to create certainty around their policy. They want to make sure that the European economy is on a solid footing. And when you look at Spain, you look at certain referendums that are going to be held in Italy, along the same sort of lines, the ECB will probably stand packed and wait and see how this unfolds when they talk about stimulus removal.
Yeah. Talking about Spain, I mean, how much political risk are you factoring into the equation when you're looking at the euro right now?
That's how long is a piece of string. There's a lot of political risk around that. And I think the biggest concern is around contagion. What do other city states, provincial states do? Like I mentioned, the referendums are going to be held in Italy, two of them in very wealthy parts of Italy. So, I would expect that those sorts of the rhetoric around that will probably continue to grow.
Yeah, and that's pretty big risk, because so far investors have assumed that the political strife will not spread to elsewhere in Europe. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. Andre, thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, that was RMB's interest rate derivative specialist, Andre Ehrenstein. Well, further afield, Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's convincing election victory lifted the Nikkei to its highest level in 21 years and world stocks to an all-time high. Abe's win, however, was met with mixed reaction, with polls suggesting half of Japan doesn't trust the Prime Minister. Here's more on that.
A gamble that paid off. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe wins a snap election with ease, although opinion on the streets of Tokyo was somewhat divided.
I didn't understand why we should select a different leader from a different party when we have seen Abe's achievements, including sound stock markets.
I think Abe uses dirty maneuvers, which is not desirable for Japan's leader.
There was less division among investors, though. Japan's Nikkei share average raced up to 21-year highs, the news also helping push world stocks to an all-time high. Abe's coalition keeps its two-thirds supermajority in the lower house, reassuring investors that his Abenomics reforms will continue. That includes the Bank of Japan's easy monetary policy, which has resulted in a weaker yen benefiting exporters.
In an economy that's seen such low levels of growth, such low levels of wage growth and inflation for so many years now, I think more stimulus and looser monetary policy seems to be the kind of last option, and especially when they are seeing signs that it is working.
Abe has a challenging time ahead. He wants to revise Japan's post-war pacifist constitution. But media exit polls show that despite the big win, over half of voters don't trust the prime minister. And there's also the continued threat from North Korea. Pyongyang has fired missiles over Japan in recent months.
Welcome back. And as you just saw ahead of the break, Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has cemented his place at the helm with a landslide victory. So while Abenomics have meant a calm political climate, why did markets react the way they did? For more, let's cross to Bronwyn now, who has a global markets report from the team standing by at the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Bronwyn.
Thanks, Alicia. Well, it seems Abenomics is here to stay. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has secured victory in the country's parliamentary elections over the weekend. This caused the yen to lose ground against the dollar and so boost Japanese equities. For a look at how European markets took the news, let's cross now to the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, where Daniel Koop is standing by. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. What are traders on your end saying about Abe's landslide victory? Because at the very least, it must mean stability.
Well, I can tell you that from the Frankfurt perspective, the result of the election gave actually the blue chip index DAX this morning a boost, because we have all this uncertainty right now going on in Europe between Barcelona and Catalonia. Because of the election in Japan, the blue chip index DAX already started the trading day over the 13,000 psychological mark. And the economics effect, you just mentioned it earlier, is very much appreciated among investors. They are liking the very business-friendly politics of the Japanese prime minister, and they are thinking that most likely what they can expect is that the Bank of Japan is also going to continue their monetary policy of pumping every month billion of US dollars in the Japanese economy, which, by the way, mostly depends on export.
As you mentioned, Catalonia is still front and center. Spain has said it will sack the Catalan regional government and call for a regional election within 6 months. So instability continues. This an attempt to crush Catalonia's independence movement. Markets seem to still be approaching the situation with caution.
Yeah, with very big caution, Bronwyn, exactly. You know, this morning we were thinking that maybe already today we would hear that Catalonia would pretty much declare for the second time their independence. Now we are hearing that they are going to talk about that again on Thursday. But this tension between Catalonia and the Spanish government is probably the number one topic here on the trading floor, not really knowing what all of this, you know, could mean. On the one hand, you know, for businesses who already announced that they might even move away from Catalonia. On the other hand, investors are really worried that this tension could, you know, result maybe even into violence. So you can really feel that investors here do hesitate right now to do big investments.
And before we end off, lots to look forward to this week. Earnings reports still coming through. And of course, the European Central Bank is meeting on Thursday. What will you be keeping a close eye on, Daniel?
Yeah, very busy week here at the trading floor. All eyes will be again on Mario Draghi on Thursday. He's going to talk again about the monetary policy of the European Central Bank. Investors have been crying for a long time for a change. We are now hearing that the bond purchasing program right now with 60 billion euros per month might change to 30 billion euros a month. On the other hand, of course, there will be again this discussion if the 0% interest rate policies, what investors are saying, finally going to change. We don't expect this to happen on Thursday. Big earning reports such as BASF, Deutsche Lufthansa, and also Volkswagen are coming in. And of course, everybody will be also keeping a very close eye because most likely we will know already by this week who is going to be the new head of the Federal Reserve in the United States, which of course also will give the market a direction how maybe the monetary policy of the going. to change. So busy week ahead for all of us here at the stock market.
A busy week, and we'll be touching on all of those stories as we go along, but let's leave it there for today. Daniel Koop is from Deutsche Welle, and that's a wrap of your global markets news. Alicia, it's back to you.
Thanks, Bronwyn, and that's all the news and analysis I have for you at this hour. Join Stephen and his guests after the break, though, as they bring you more analysis of the global markets seen in Global Investor.